It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Swing, high fly ball, built to right center, and the Braves have won it!
There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
A walk-off homer from Freeman, and the Braves win it!
He is! Braves win!
Fair ball, it's a walk-off. Acuna sends us home.
Welcome to Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Braves digital media content manager, alongside in person in the Braves alumni lounge here at Truist Park, director of Braves alumni relations, Greg McMichael. Greg, this is now our second episode where we're fully recording back in person in the alumni lounge at Truist Park. It feels good to be back. It feels like nature is healing. We just announced here, actually just a few hours ago as of us sitting here, that starting in May, third homestand of the season, that we're going back to 100% capacity here at Truist Park, and I'm just giddy. I'm beyond excited. It's been great having fans back in the ballpark in a limited capacity, but to know that we're going to have a full ballpark again soon is really, really great. And hey, and if you're in the Atlanta area and are still wanting to get a vaccine, we're also check out on Truist Park social media channels. We're offering the free vaccinations here at Truist Park when the Braves are out of town as well. Yeah. So
May 1st, right?
May 1st, yes, sir. That's right. May 1st.
The second one, May 26th. I think I read that today.
I believe that's right. Yeah, the first one's definitely on May 1st. I think you're right. 26th. So it's all happening here at Truist Park. So we're very excited about that. We're very excited about our guest today. Somebody who I think is familiar to everybody in Braves country at this point. You see him every night. If you're old farts like Greg and I, you remember watching him play for the Braves back in the day. We're not that old.
We're close.
Paul retired, what, 2010? Somewhere in there?
Yeah.
So, okay. All right.
We're close.
All right. Yeah, I guess I don't want to admit it. I am kind of an old
I'm older than him, and I'm older than you, so I'm the oldest fart, if you want to.
Okay, there you go. All right, you're the eldest fart of the group. Yeah. No, I remember watching Paul Bird play for the Braves back in the day, and he's just been such a great addition to Braves broadcast from day one, since he's been part of them for a number of years now, and he's just one of a kind, great personality, insightful, entertaining, and just, you know, people who are good at multiple things. I mean, to make it in the big leagues as a player like you guys have is so amazing. We even get into that in the interview, like the Paul lays out the percentages of just really breaks it down of just how rare it is to even make it to the big leagues. But then to go from that and being not just a broadcaster but a really darn good one is very impressive and speaks a lot to Paul, doesn't it?
Yeah, anytime I see one of my alumni, they transition into a new career, it's just I love it because I think it's so healthy. I think the guys who struggle the most are the ones that they, after they're done with their career, they don't dig into anything else. And so Paul definitely has done just a great job, and being here part of our team and what he brings to the broadcast is pretty phenomenal. You know, Paul and I were both drafted by the Indians, and then we ended up getting traded for one another. So he was with the Mets. I was here.
You got traded for one another?
Yeah, we
really?
Got traded for one another, yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah,
that.
So he came here in 97, and I went to New York and played 3 years there. So, yeah, we have that little bit of connection, and we've known each other for a long time. And, you know, he's the same off the field as what you see, or off the broadcast as you see on the broadcast. So he loves people and does a great job. So I'm always excited anytime we can include our alumni in anything that the Braves do, whether it's, you know, with what Andrew and Chipper and TP and Eddie and those guys are doing in the minor leagues, to what Paul and BJ and Moreland and Nick are doing on the you know, with Bally on the broadcast. So I love it. As many of these guys we can have involved around here, it's better for me.
Absolutely, it's great. And one thing we didn't even get a chance to talk to him about it, or I didn't, and we'll do it next time he's on, but it's just how good he is at social media too, because it's like, to be a broadcaster nowadays, you don't have to do it, but I think a lot of it helps a lot if they're also active on social media with their viewers and their their fans. And Paul just does such a great job with that on social media and capturing just his offering his opinions, capturing content stuff with fans that he does, interacting with fans is great. So he's just he's just such a great addition to what we do here with the Braves broadcasts. And well, hey, instead of us going on and on about it, why don't we just get straight to it? Here he is, Paul Byrd.
Well, hey, Paul. Appreciate you joining us here on Behind the Braves. I mean, this is our third season. Man, your schedule's tough. About time we got you on here, right?
Man, I kept trying to get on this podcast. I was like, what do I got to do? Been sending you guys checks in the mail.
You raised the freeze, did
that's
everything.
That's what I'm saying.
You know?
I mean, what do you want from me? I'm trying as hard as I can to get on this podcast. It finally happened.
You know, it has been, I guess part of me, I see you so much, and you do so much around here for this team, that I'm like, ah, God, I'd love to have him on, but do I really want to ask him to do one more thing? He's poor thing. He's here every night. He's here late. I mean, rain delays. He's doing. He's digging up, finding balls up underneath the daiquiri machine up in the upper deck.
Hey, whatever it takes, you know. I tell everybody I'm the utility man for the Braves. Like, what do you need? You need me to go in the booth, stand in the well. You need me to find baseballs. You know, jump in the fountain. I'm ready.
Hey, there's something to be said for that. A little job security, because there ain't many guys like us that are willing to do some of these things and still in baseball, right?
And I literally said that. We got one hit a few days ago in a doubleheader, and there was nothing good to talk about. I'm like, hey, it's dragging. Birdie, can you do something, whatever? It's like, what do you want me to do? You want me to go up top and jump down into the fountain? I don't know how it's going to end, but people will tune in, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I ended up with a little kid up there, and Max Fried, who's, you know, coming back, did some bounding drills. So I took a little kid, we did some bounding drills, and, you know, try to make people smile and have fun. Baseball's a hard game, so you've got to have fun on the bad days, or,
oh my gosh,
you know, you need to do something else.
Let me tell you what was priceless as I was watching the game the other night, and when that kid from Tennessee caught that ball, and the smile on his face and the look of like, dude, I just stole that ball from you. What do you, you're the big leaguer? And you went down there and talked to him, and he said he was blowing up on TikTok. I mean, my wife and I were dying laughing. Yeah. That was that. You couldn't have had any better moment in the game than that right there. We were talking. I mean, the guy from Arizona, what was the right fielder's name? I'm sorry.
Cole Calhoun.
Yeah. Calhoun was talking about in the press conference about how excited he was and how he was impressed. I mean, that couldn't have been a better moment. What was that like for you?
Well, it was his first ever game. Like, you know, it doesn't get any better. He just looked up. He didn't stand up to catch the ball, you know. Cole Calhoun with the glove right there, and was probably interference. We can't go back now, so I'm comfortable saying that.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, he caught it, and what a great sport Cole Calhoun was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when the 13-year-old young man said, I'm pretty sure I'm famous in Atlanta right now, that is broadcasting gold. And shout out to his mom, you know, Samantha, because she does ER, and, you know, she brought him all the way down here for his first game, got him good seats, and he was extremely well spoken, wasn't nervous.
Wasn't he? Yeah.
No way I could have done that when
beaming.
I was 13.
She was behind him just so proud.
Yeah.
I mean, it was awesome.
I turned around after the interview and I said, great job, Mom, you know, and gave her a high five. And she was, like you said, so excited that he was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Grammy.
That kid's going to take my job in about 15, 10 years, maybe sooner.
He
was that good.
He could, and there's been a lot of moments that you've been a part of over the last, what's it been, has it been 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah.
For you?
I think it's been 7 or 8.
Really?
I started out doing studio.
That's right, you did.
And they said, can you come down and fill in for the weekend? So I was like, sure. So I came down, and the Red Sox were playing, and I enjoyed it. You know, I was coaching at the time. I was a few years out of retirement, maybe 3 years. And I'm just passionate about the game. I love the game. So anytime I get to talk about the game, it feels good. So that's how it started. And then the next year, Mike Iaquino has passed. He's a good friend of mine. Miss him every day. He really mentored me in this business along with Jerome Jarenovich. And he called me the next year and he said, you're our number one choice. Would you do this full time? You know, and I was coaching and I was like, man, I don't, you know. So we cut a deal where I did it part time. And he said, the only problem is, he goes, everybody thinks you're too serious. And
really,
you need to spice it up a little bit. I was like, well, then I did a bad job portraying who I am, because I actually get in trouble for not being serious enough most of the time. Even from my wife, she's like, okay, inappropriate joke. It's time to be serious. So in baseball, sometimes, you know, I can be too funny. So I was like, oh, well, that's easy for me. I can make that happen quickly. And, taking an interview in the locker room after a game, as you know, both, is different than having an earpiece, having to communicate something, look at a specific camera, be clean, crisp, say what you want to say, say it with confidence, and then get it back to the host, and then post-game respond to something that somebody else possibly could be feeling. Because when you take an interview in the locker room, you're like, here's exactly how I felt. You tell the guys, the reporters, like it or not, you try to be honest and you try to be courteous and you do a good job. But then when you're trying to say, okay, here's what happened to somebody else and here's what – all of a sudden, I was uncomfortable.
Mm.
And doing that live took a while. And but I enjoy it now, and I've enjoyed – the challenge of that craft, and I hope I can do it a little longer.
It's interesting bringing that up, Hal, because that is tough, just interviewing people, especially I've still never interviewed a player after a game right after that, and that's got to be a tough spot. I was thinking back to when I first had my first little temporary stint with the Braves, which was almost 10 years ago now. I came down and did some stuff on what was called the Braves Country Caravan at the time. And so they had a camera, and gave me a cameraman and a mic, and I was on the bus for a couple of days with players, and it was interesting because I found out interviewing the players part and having some fun with them, that was the part that was pretty easy because it was laid back. It wasn't a game situation. We were having fun, and they were used to having a microphone in their face and knew how to do it. The part I struggled with was interviewing fans and whatnot at these appearances we would go to, because they're not used to having a microphone in their face or a camera, and when they weren't giving me anything, I didn't know how to draw anything out of them, and that was like, I was like a deer in the headlights. So it's like, I marvel at what you do, like with the young fan the other night we were just talking about, and like, I love seeing you with players. I think you do a great job, but I especially just enjoy your work with when you're just interviewing a Braves fan in the stands, and I think there's a special talent to that. I mean, it's people such as yourself make it look easy, but it's difficult at times.
Well, it is, and here's the danger. You never know what you're going to get.
Right.
You don't know what that person's going to say, if they're going to clam up, if they're going to, you know, drop a curse word. You don't know what's going to happen when somebody gets nervous and does something that they're not used to. So there's always a risk. But when you hit it like the other night, right, I think it just brings so much to a broadcast that is really special. My first ever challenge was that first year, and I'm replacing Ron Gant, who goes to the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got Brian Jordan on my right, and then I got Jerome Jarenovich over here. And the question's going to come to me. We rehearsed a little bit, but a lot of it's, hey, you can run audibles all the time. And I knew the question was going to be about Jason Hayward. My very first opening day, this is my fourth broadcast, it's live, and Jerome asked me a question, and I don't hear him, because we have so many people around the set. They're screaming and chanting, and one guy is literally screaming, "Where's Ron Gant?" "Where's Ron Gant?" You know, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going to try to answer this question. I don't really get it. And then this Phillies fan, who I played for Philly for 3 years, goes, "That's Paul Bird, you traitor." He goes, "You jerk." And I don't know what kind of show this is. I think this is a G-rated show, but he dropped an F-bomb, and he said, "F you, Paul Bird." And I'm trying to answer this question.
Which is a term of endearment for the Phillies, right?
This is a term of endearment. It means that you're accepted and loved. I learned that from John Vukovic. He goes, if they don't yell at you, they don't care about you. So always take that as a positive. So and I panic. Mm. And I don't, and I just start talking, Hayward, and I start talking about how tall he is, and it just it made no sense. And Brian Jordan's looking at me with one eye, like, "Hey, you know, like, shut it down, man." And
I kicked it back to take greenies before this show.
That's what I'm saying. I kicked it back to Jerome and Mike Iacchino, and my era producer is like, "Hey, just calm down. You're gonna be okay. Calm down." And my goodness, and that's what I thought to myself, I'm not sure I can do this job. This is a whole lot different than a player interview.
Well, I'm not surprised, and I don't know if you remember this, but when I first took over and started doing my role with the Braves in 2010, shortly after that, you retired. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And I knew the Braves had gone through several guys, Jay Howe, Jeff Treadway, that were doing the pregame. Mm-hmm. And somebody in the front office asked me who I thought would be good, and threw out a couple names, and I said Paul would be awesome at this. And I think at the time we had talked, and you said, I'm not really to commit. I don't want to commit. I just want to do a little bit. But I knew early on, just by knowing your personality and knowing you for a long time, that you would do really well. And so I'm not surprised at your success, but I'm wondering if you're surprised. I mean, you won. Were you nominated for an Emmy, or did you win the Emmy?
I've been nominated for a bunch, but I have won. I did win one, and I still
look
at that on my my kids. You know, we tease that moves around the house. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm like, you know, I bring it in the living room and put it in. I'm like, hey, baby, you want to go on a date with an Emmy Award winner?
That's right.
And she's like, oh, God, you're going to make me vomit. You know, but I'm more proud of that than I am, I think, anything I accomplished in baseball. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't please everybody. You can just be yourself and talk baseball. And I love what I do. Mm-hmm. And like I was saying, it's not easy. Communication, developing your brand, being yourself, having good content, you know, all of that is kind of an art and a craft. Mm-hmm. And Michael Kelly, who is a, you know, famous actor, House of Cards up in New York.
We've had him
Braves
on here.
Fans, you know, he said, man, I love your work. And I said, oh, man, I am working. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I've been stuck in recess my whole life, and there's a blessing in that. I was good at recess and art, you know, like it's like Chevy Chase on SNL. I was told there'd be no math with his job. So, but I was like, oh, this is my work. Mm-hmm. This is my craft. And I'm super proud of that award. Thank you for saying that. And
did you ever go and do any workshops on your own, or have you had any training, or did just something that you felt kind of came natural to you and you just kind of learned on the job?
So no, I haven't. And that's why I struggled early on, even, you know, in the booth where I've filled in at times. I think I've covered the pitching so much because I love the pitching, and I'm kind of learning in that area too. And there's just different times where I've just really had to learn at my craft at a very high level. And but I've also been blessed to be able to play the game and know things that I can communicate that maybe someone else can't. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of a symphony, you know, where Chip Carey did have that training, grew up in a broadcasting family, is a phenomenal voice, and knows exactly how to kick the ball over to you and take it back. And so that there's a talent in that as well. And so I've had to learn, okay, what is my brand? I've had to develop that now. And this is going to shock you a little bit. Young kids come to me, you know, high school, college. One happened the other day. Says, I really want to learn, you know, what can I do now? Mm. And so if there's any of those listening, I always tell them, turn the TV down, watch the game, start calling the game now, and listen, you know, record yourself and listen back. And then I say this, and this is probably the most shocking thing. I say, take an acting class, take an improv acting class, learn to be uncomfortable. Mm. Learn to speak off the cuff and learn to be comfortable when you're uncomfortable, when your heart rate's up. Because there's many times now, well, they will come to me, it happened the other day, where I'm getting ready to give a report and Austin Riley hits a 434-foot home run. Well, Gretchen, our producer, says, no, you're talking about Riley now. And I have 15 seconds before I'm getting ready to go on, and now I got to shift. And there's a little bit of uncomfortableness in that because now I got to carry a video. I got to carry what happened. I got to carry, you know. And I got, if I don't know everything, you know, I've got to still carry that certain amount of time and still give it to the fans, with a lot of power and, you know, passion. Mm-hmm. So you have to be, point I'm making is there's times where I'm still uncomfortable, nervous, uneasy, have to breathe. I got to make that 3-2 pitch on the corner with the bases loaded. You know, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like in my career, those have been the biggest turning points or learning moments or those times where going into it, I was nervous / horribly uncomfortable in what I was trying to do because I didn't know what I was doing. And I was attempting to do something for the first time, and it was daunting. And I just felt that uncomfortability, if that's even a word. I'm from Virginia, the mountains, so I don't know.
It works.
Eastern Tennessee, hillbilly. So he'll just agree with me.
Well, yeah, and I'm from Kentucky, so we all get it.
There you go. Yeah. But those are the moments I've always felt like I look back on them, and if I ever have kids someday, that'll be one of those things I teach, is like it's okay to be nervous if you're trying something that's going to be part of it. Be uncomfortable with it and see what happens. And you might fail, but that's where you're going to learn the most, I feel like. So it sounds like pursuing broadcasting when you retired from playing, that wasn't really something – I mean, you said you were coaching. Like, was it something you ever even thought about?
I was always told, you'd be great in broadcasting. You'd be great in broadcasting. So guys like Tim Kirkchen and others, like, as soon as you retire, call me. You're going to be doing this. And so when I retired, I had that, you know. It's like Mac just said, like, I had that. People were like, hey, can you come do a tryout? Can you come to this? And my wife moved us 56 times while I played. I was not good enough to stick with one team. I wasn't bad enough to retire. So we kept moving around, and we had two boys, and she just looked at me and she said, what's the point of money if you miss your kids grow up? And I was like, man. So it really stood me up. My son at one time asked me when he was younger, you know, 4 or 5 years old, if my other family had as good a toys as they had. I don't have another when I get in, and it's okay if you do, you know, but I was like, oh no, I'm going in a plane to play baseball, but I was gone so much. That's what he, you know, took away. So when I retired, my goal was to just build into my family. And what I was told in this business as well was, you're either in or you're out. Like, it's a yes business. If you say no, they just get somebody else. So I didn't retire to go into this, or I would have just kept playing. And but what I learned was, I thought, well, I'll just do that later. Well, I started coaching, and I was fine. But then after that, you know, I was like, hey, if I wanted to go, nobody remembered Paul Byrd anymore. I mean, real quick, you get forgotten really quickly. So all of a sudden, you know, so now even players who ask me questions, and I remember telling this to Frenchie, I'm like, don't take a couple years off. They won't, you know, just do something to keep your foot in the door or whatever. And he's different in that he's a cult figure here and everything like that. So he maybe didn't have to do that like I would have if I had it to do over again. But fortunately, a couple years later, somebody remembered and came down and got a little call, and I liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually, when I talk to the alumni, of course, there's guys at all different stages, some that were superstars and some that maybe played a day and some that played 5 years. I always share with them, too, whether if you want to go into coaching or scouting, you need some downtime, but you can't get a lot of downtime.
That's right. That's exactly right.
There's a whole other cycle of guys. I think I was having this discussion with Brandon Beachy the other day, who just recently retired, And I said, you know what, it would be great if you really knew what you wanted to do right when you were done, but most of us don't.
Right.
But you still need to unwind, but you got to limit your unwinding because you have a brand, right?
Yeah.
And you coaches remember you, and you have people that like you. You just got to make sure they're still in the same places that they were you have the opportunity to coach or scout or broadcasting. But it's tough because you're right. There's so many guys that just kind of keep coming out, right? And you have to take advantage of some of your opportunities. One thing I was going to say, you know, you've had, when I look back and just was reading some stuff about you, you've had a lot of life experiences. So, you know, you went to college, right? You played at LSU. You were drafted by the Indians. You know,
yes.
You and I had that in common. I think you were just right after I'd already left to go on to the Braves. You played in the big leagues. You were an all-star. And some of your stats were pretty amazing where, you know, your 200 inning seasons were pretty amazing. The number of complete games, you led the league 1 year, complete games. And you had 15 win seasons. I don't know if it was like, I think it was like 3 or 4 15 win seasons. So some of those things were like, you know, we talk about this and joke about this today, that those things don't happen anymore, right? I mean, nobody has that many innings. Nobody has complete games. But that was something that you were very durable. Even though you had a little bit of injury at one point in time, you played a long time and you were very durable, so you took care of yourself. But I was just thinking about those life experiences. And then you've gone into broadcasting, and then you've done speaking. You've written a book.
Yes.
So you've had a lot of things that when I look at you, I say, well, you've been prepared for this because you've just done a lot of things, and you've got a lot to offer, and it really comes across. So I think when Ricky was talking about you being able to relate and talk with fans, that doesn't surprise me at all, just because I know all the different experiences you've had, it makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, I appreciate
that. So with that, my question is, after doing so much and experience, do you see something next for you? I mean, are you content where you are, or do you have like a, now that you've been doing this, do you have a plan where you think something else you'd like to do in the future?
Right now, no. I'm content where I am. My wife runs an equine therapy ministry next door. I do a little bit of that. Fundraise for her. She runs the day-to-day. I live on the farm. I enjoy that experience. To go to New York or to go to L.A. and, you know, ratchet up a little bit, I don't see myself. And that may change tomorrow, but I'm comfortable with where I am. And I think that I would like to do more writing. I really enjoy writing. And, guys, I just turned 50. What do you think?
Join the club.
You're thinking like, is this guy 42 looking over here?
I had 41.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that hit me a little bit. Like, oh, it's a great question you just asked that I can't answer, but it's certainly a question that I've asked myself is, okay, what do you want to do now with the rest of your life? There's an incredible documentary out called The Social Dilemma.
Yep.
I encourage everybody to watch. And this guy who stepped down from Pinterest, and one of the reasons he stepped down is he was in his pantry looking up Pinterest while his wife and kids were outside in the kitchen waiting to spend time with him. And he said, it occurred to me that I have a team of the most, you know, brilliant minds around working as hard as they can 24/7 to try and figure out how to keep you logged in. And he said, it's really a question to each person, what do you want to give your life to? And that's just kind of haunted me. What is it that I want to give my life to and my time? And so, so I'm chewing on that. And right now I'm still passionate about communicating, teaching baseball. I think it has purpose. I enjoy it. I feel fulfilled doing it. I don't want to head off and do football and basketball and all that. Right. You know what I'm saying? Be gone all the time. I value my family. I value my kids. So right now, that's what I want to do.
Well, one thing you haven't done is fantasy camp, and you will get an opportunity.
I'm ready. I am ready to give a speech to the fantasy campers. Yes.
You will be very – my first one was pre-COVID, so let's see, January 2020, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was I had just a blast with all those folks, and you will be very much in your element there. You'll fit right in.
Do I have to throw BP?
You can pitch for your – you'll be a pitching coach.
Okay.
And then you'll have the chance to pitch for your team in one game, like a preseason game.
Okay.
So let's say Sid Bream's your manager. You're the pitching coach. So he'll play first base, and you'll maybe throw an inning against the team that you're playing, and that's a preseason
game. That's risky.
But
maybe get 10 pitches.
Well,
you have to go on the IL.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm the GM. So I was a spot starter, but
right.
I thought after I turned 52, I'm thinking – what am I doing?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I've got a surgically repaired shoulder, yes. And I said, I don't want to have that surgically repaired twice.
Yes. So I've had, not being a topper, but, yeah, I've had it twice. Once while playing reconstructed, and then this is the hardest ever, throwing to your kids. Because I was coaching travel ball, and that's like 7 games on a weekend. So I'm throwing BP Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a couple different games.
That's no joke.
Kids are like, show me the slider, show me the curve. You know, I'm like, yeah, sure, here it is, here it is. All of a sudden, my shoulder doesn't work anymore after 4 or 5 years of that. I thought that was harder than actually playing in the big leagues, because it was just,
you were like,
no,
you want to see a big league slider? Oh, wow, it doesn't look like it used to.
Yeah.
Well, talking about your kids, I mean, how are they? How are the boys? Grayson's in the Cubs organization?
Cubs organization, yeah. He's fighting it out and kind of got a late start. He broke his back when he transferred to Clemson, but I'm real proud of him. He battled back. He was an All-American there. Great kid, great teammate. I'm proud of the man that he's become. And then I've always really enjoyed the arts, like writing and speaking and talking, as you're saying. So my son, Colby, who is, you know, a year and a half younger than Grayson, went to Samford, got a business degree, emphasis in entrepreneurship. So I thought he was going the business route. COVID hits, we have a heart-to-heart, man-to-man. I said, hey, if everything paid the same, what would you do? He said, easy, I'd be a screenwriter. So he's got an internship with a company out of Nashville, and he is doing some screenwriting, and he loves to write. And
that's awesome.
So I told him to go for it, man. Who am I to, you know, say, that's a low percentage job, you know, like not many screenwriters, but, you know, let somebody else tell him that. I'm not going to let, you know, and who's to say he can't do it? So I'm like, you don't have a family right now. You don't have to provide for yourself. I was like, man, live out of a truck, get an Airstream, do whatever you need to do and go for it, you know? So he's fighting that climb.
I feel like there's something to be said too for kids who grow up with somebody as a parent who had a, what did you just call it, a low percentage, who whether you teaching them that or not, they're seeing somebody in their this important person in their life who managed to get one of those low percentage jobs. I mean, I feel like that because I had a dad who had one of those as well, and it kind of, that's part of what in how I ended up working in Major League Baseball, which is, it's working in professional sports. It's just, it's hard to get a job in professional sports because a lot of people want that. So, I don't know, I guess I feel some kinship with him. Like, that's great. That's great to see him going after his dream. That's great.
People don't realize only 10% of people drafted get to Double A.
Right.
You know, 4% of people drafted get to the big leagues, and 4% of those 4% play longer than 3.5 years. That's crazy numbers, you know? Mm-hmm. So if somebody gets there and has played a little bit, you know, they deserve your respect at least, even if you don't like them, and you should listen to them.
And there's even fewer from Kentucky and Tennessee.
That's what I'm saying. And then for those who came from Kentucky who had blonde hair with a mullet,
that's right.
Even fewer,
that's
you know,
right.
Maybe one. So, yeah, but I am proud that, you know, guys like A.J. Minter are bringing the mullet back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah, I don't look so stupid to my kids anymore.
Well, talking about Kentucky, my last question for me. I'd read up on you that you, growing up in Kentucky, you would go to Churchill Downs
yes.
as a kid with your dad and learned a little bit about how to bet races. Now, I like the few times I've been to a horse track in my day. Yeah. I enjoy going. Have no idea what I'm doing, but I enjoy attempting to learn how to bet. What was that like going to Churchill Downs as a kid with your dad?
Man, there's nothing like it. It was a rite of passage when I was in like the fifth grade, and he taught me how to read a racing form, how to place a bet. So there's a proper order in which you place a bet. And so that was a rite of passage for me, you know, and it can be $2 to win on Seabiscuit. And then you get that printed ticket. My dad's standing over my right shoulder looking at me, gives me the nod. You know, the guy that gives you the ticket gives you the nod, and you feel cool. So I won about $60 my first summer at Churchill Downs, and I got some binoculars so I could watch the horses run on the backstretch.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was a really cool experience. My first derby as well. That came as a freshman in high school. You know, I went with a group that was a little bit older, a girl who was a friend of mine. I played with her. I ended up dating this girl. But anyways, that was another rite of passage going to the infield. You know, I'm a freshman, and they injected oranges with bourbon. And, you know, yeah, it was my dad was a police officer, and so one of them got busted for carrying some drugs in, smuggling it. Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm a freshman. I didn't know anything, you know? So it was like, wow. So there's a lot of stories I can tell about Churchill Downs, some clean, some not. But there was a big rite of passage, and so we were, everybody's there to party, and, you know, I'm not. I didn't drink. I wanted to get to the big league, so I made a vow with my all this, right? So I got out the racing form, and, you know, everybody's partying, and I'm trying to win money on the horses. She's like, what are you doing? And, you know, it was a really cool experience for me. And then, you know, when the Cleveland Indians drafted me and signed me, I made a little donation back to Churchill Downs with some of my signing bonus. Nice. Yeah. I had a great time, and I love the horses, and really cool ending of the story. When my father passed away in 2017, we had a racehorse in our pasture right next door, and I would finish broadcasting, and I would come back home and get out of the car in my dress shoes, which you see now, and walk over in the pasture and talk about my dad to the horse.
Mm.
And this is crazy. The horse would grab my forearm with his mouth, because horses, you know, they don't have hands, so their mouth is their hand, and they're not biting you. They'll just rest. And he would hold my forearm, you know, with his mouth. Wow. And I would just sit there and weep. And it was really, really cool experience. As a racehorse named Abel. And
is he one of your therapy horses?
He is, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so it was a really cool experience for me, seeing things come full circle. And I'm like, man, I'm sitting here talking to a racehorse in my pasture and just thankful for my dad.
Yeah. That's an awesome story. Well, I think we wouldn't do this podcast justice if we didn't talk a little bit about the team. I mean, you know this team intimately. You follow them for multiple years. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of our fans out there that are a little frustrated right now. I mean, we're barely under 500. We've shown glimpses, but we've got the injury bug a little bit. So, What do you see that's going on right now that maybe everybody doesn't know, but then, and where do you see this team? What's their potential?
Well, so it's baseball, right? So anything can happen. So the danger is to say, wow, they won it the last 3 years. They got the same players. They're going to be great. We don't know what's going to happen. So that's one of the reasons I love this game so much, is there's always some team that you expect to come in last place. They don't. There's always some great story out there. Some guy that was pumping gas a year before, Peter Moylan, was, you know, scrubbing pools, and 5 years later, 5 months later, he's pitching in the big leagues against Ryan Howard. So I love this game. It's very unpredictable. There's no guarantees, but I do like the guys on this team. They've just gotten off to a slow start, and there is, you know, an injury bug that they worked through last year, and they're going to have to work through it again this year. But over the long haul, I like this team. It's a tough division. Nobody's gotten out of the gate quickly, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, Ricky and I, we enjoy talking about the team because there's a lot to talk about. We've got superstars on here. We got guys, like you said, coming out of nowhere, young players, veteran players. They're always fun. They're fun to watch. And I love talking about pitching. And you can imagine how much pitching we talk on this podcast. But anyway, we've had a great time with you. There's a lot that we didn't get
Are we done?
Yeah, I know.
You know why we're done, right?
Why?
I talk too much.
No. That's what this is all about.
One question, it's over.
That's good. But we also know that we're looking at longevity. So if we spent all of our time and used up all your time right now, then we wouldn't be able to have you on again and talk about something else. So we like to have guys come on, you know, multiple times. So like I said, this is our third season, right, Ricky?
And I've noticed that the less that you and I talk and the more the guests talk, the higher the ratings go.
Yeah, there we go.
So this is a good one.
We do shows ourselves called the Harry and Bubba Show, but that's for another time.
Yeah.
You can do that because you're from Tennessee, is that right?
Well, no. I mean, he calls me Harry because what?
Well, this was our first season when we were out in Vegas for the winter meetings, and we went to Greg Maddox's house and did an episode with him.
Yeah.
And he kept – and so we went there first and had lunch. He, Greg, they played golf that morning that I met up with them. And we had lunch at Greg's house and Greg Maddox's house. And the whole time, Maddox kept calling him Harry. And I didn't know what that was about. And I was like, well, I'll wait till we're recording and then I'll ask. And so I asked. And apparently from Greg McMichael's rookie year, one of the first times that some of his teammates saw him in the shower, they came running out and said that there was a bear running loose in the shower.
It was Sasquatch.
That
was Dion gave me that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, and then Bubba for me is just somebody in the comment section of this show called and referred to me as Bubba. I was like, all right, let's go with that. So
I love it.
You didn't happen to see our debut of calling a game, did you?
I did not.
On Facebook Live?
I heard it was good, though. No, it wasn't.
It was a summer scrimmage. It was last year during COVID where they had nobody else, and they asked us if we'd just go up and, instead of silence, we'd just talk about the game.
Oh, my goodness.
I gained that much more appreciation for how hard of a job you guys have calling a game.
We did. Yep. Well, thanks so much, Paul, and we'd love to have you on. I'm serious about Fantasy Camp. We'll be talking about that pretty soon, all right?
I'm ready to go. Thanks, right, guys.
Thank you, Paul. Our thanks again to Paul Byrd for joining us here on Behind the Braves. All right, Greg, we talked about at the top of the show. We've got full ballparks again starting in May, and that means that we've got Alumni Weekend coming up. So we'll have a full ballpark against the Pirates for Alumni Weekend, and so we've got an Alumni Sunday during the first homestand where we'll be back to a full capacity. So all right, let's go in order here. Who do we have for Alumni Sunday?
So I don't want to say it yet. I'm working on it. It'll be a surprise, but I usually try to get it out about a week ahead of time. So I've got a few more days trying to finalize some things. The great thing about Alumni Weekend is that, like you said, it will be a full capacity, which is great. And then we've probably 40 guys here, and we've got some big names. So we're pretty excited about that. And then Alumni Sundays are a little different this year. So right now with the way, it's been situated with the ballpark and having limited fans, we've been doing Q&As in the plaza up on the stage. So I've been interviewing guys, kind of like a little mini podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a lot of fun. So we had Dale Murphy, then we had Terry Pendleton. And so anyway, we'll have a good guest coming up here on May 9th. And so looking forward to that. And then we'll go right into, at the end of the month, we'll have Alumni Weekend. And it'll be a very similar format than what we've done in years, looking at the parade. And we're going to have introductions in some nice Ford cars, because Ford's our sponsor now, which we're real excited about. And then we'll go into a Saturday where we're going to do some Q&As around the ballpark and do some autographs and for the fans. So it'll be a really, really good time. And Alumni Weekend has always been really special to me, because I get to bring back a bunch of old teammates and guys that are near and dear to some of the fans here in Braves country. So looking forward to another great weekend.
Awesome. I can't wait, man. I didn't get to catch your full Q&A with TP the other week, but they did play a clip of it in stadium before that day's game, and it sounded great and looks cool. So
thank
I
you.
Very much encourage everybody to come out. May 9th will be the next one of those out in the plaza.
Mother's Day.
Mother's Day. Okay, great. Everybody come out and check out Mac and his surprise guest for that. And then Alumni Weekend, look, we talk about it. We've talked about it a lot on here, or I've talked about it a lot too, how it's always one of my favorite weekends on the Braves calendar every year. And it just because it's just so much fun seeing all the guys from all the different eras. And just genuinely what I love seeing all you former players up there, and you can just tell how genuinely happy all the guys are to be back at the ballpark and just putting on the Braves jersey and waving to fans and getting that love from the fans who watched them play for all those years. It's really, really a special thing. So hopefully everybody can come out and see us play against the an old rival in the Pittsburgh Pirates. So looking forward to that. All right. Well, great. Well, thanks again to Paul Byrd. I think you and I both could have talked to him for hours and hours. And
we want him to come back.
I know. We try not to wear out our welcome with our guests. So we'll definitely visit with him again later on. As always, thanks for listening, rating, reviewing, subscribing, Behind the Braves, wherever you get your podcasts. And for Greg McMichael, I'm Ricky Mast. We'll see you next week.
Hey, Braves country, we just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.